This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Are you psyched? It's Super Tuesday. Been waiting 4 years for this, except it's not so super this year, is it? Doesn't really, you know, usually it's knockdown, drag out. Who's going to carry which state? And does the person who won New Hampshire have a chance in, oh, I don't know, Colorado, where Donald Trump is back on the ballot, thanks to the Supreme Court of the United States. But look, you know, I know, everybody knows, Nikki Haley knows that Trump has got the nomination. He hasn't gotten it mathematically yet, but that will come. And so, you know, the junkies are obviously interested in who did well in which precincts and what was Nikki Haley's best state and all that. But it doesn't matter. In fact, you'll see yet even stronger tidal wave of journalistic questions to Nikki Haley and just pundits bloviating among themselves. Why is she still in the race? Why doesn't she drop out? She'd only vowed to stay in through Super Tuesday. So she could either suspend her campaign or she could just hang around. You know, do interviews, not have to spend much money. I don't know. But with all these big states voting, the math is going to look very different. But first, we have to get to a pressing economic issue. And that is, according to one of my favorite characters on Sesame Street, his favorite snack is shrinking, according to this investigative report in the Washington Post. Me hate shrinkflation. Me cookies are getting smaller. Hey, if you're a parent, you had to watch hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes of Sesame Street and decide whether you liked Elmo or Big Bird or Oscar, etc. So I know the deal here. But shrinkflation is, you know, this practice where companies, instead of raising prices, they just give you less. And look, Cookie Monster has often, at least online, posted about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. He's spoken about therapy and has endorsed self-care. But the best part of this is it gets a response from the White House. Whose statement says C is not just for Cookie, it's also for consumers getting ripped off. President Biden is calling on companies to put a stop to shrinkflation. I don't know, couldn't they come up with something funnier? Me don't know, me buy more cookies. All right. Let's start with the story that's going to dominate today. I was able to get it into yesterday's podcast, so I've had much more of a chance to think about and read about Supreme Court's 9-0 decision. Not only putting Donald Trump back on the ballot in Colorado, as well as Maine, as well as Illinois, but ruling that no state can decide whether to knock a presidential candidate off the ballot. Federal level, sure, there's lots of challenges. And state level, there are challenges to petitions, and you know, you got to be 35 under the Constitution to run. So those kinds of things. And it's just so fascinating, both the decision and the reaction. So everybody, all of these left-leading crusaders, Trump haters, Biden lovers, who were all over the tube, saying when Colorado, the state's highest court there, all Democratic appointees, decide, oh, no, we can't have this guy on the ballot. Their reaction is fascinating. But now, some of them are still teed off about this. But remember, they're griping about a decision which, despite the fact that there were different concurring opinions with the liberals saying the conservative majority had gone too far, in other words, deciding, essentially sidelining the argument that the now famous Section 3 of the 14th Amendment could apply to presidents, a post-Civil War statute rarely used since then, since it was aimed at the Confederacy, which mostly is not around anymore. And so let me just scroll down here and give you some of the coverage. New York Times reporter says that Mario Nicolay, attorney for the Colorado side, said the Supremes had abrogated their responsibility to our democracy. I hope that the cowardice of the court today doesn't lead to bloodshed tomorrow. Pretty gracious, huh? And now it's all about, well, you know, we're not going to be intimidated. This is the Supreme Court of the United States. And if you have Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, with whatever varied reasoning, joined in that particular argument about the court deciding issues it didn't have to decide, as opposed to just saying, you know, this can't be done, it's not up to the states, whatever, by the last Trump appointee, Amy Coney Barrett. Now you got these libs hanging out there, and that's not good enough for them. That Jackson and Sotomayor and Kagan could join with the likes of Sam Alito, Brett Kavanaugh, and Clarence Thomas. Jim Acosta, the anti-Trump CNN anchor. Trump has played the legal system like a fiddle. Head of the Maine Republican Party says he's going to go after the Democratic Secretary of State, Shenna Bellows, who single-handedly ruled in December that Trump was ineligible for the ballot. One bureaucrat was trying to alter the presidential election based on her opinion, says the Maine GOP chief. And, I mean, here's even Coney Barrett saying, this is not the time to amplify disagreement with stridency, particularly in this circumstance. Writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. Well, good luck with that. But, you know, there's a bottom line to all these things. And in that bottom line is the fact that this was a major win for Donald Trump. It wasn't an unexpected win, but it could have been 7-2 or 6-3 or something like that. So probably we'll see stories about behind the scenes, how Chief Justice John Roberts was trying to, in order to preserve or perhaps enhance the court's battered credibility, get everybody to, a core set of facts they could agree on that would make the court appear to speak with one voice. Democratic Secretary of State in Colorado, Jenna Griswold, for making the TV rounds. And, you know, instead of saying, you know, we'll abide by the rule of the court, but I disagree. And she says in one interview, it means that federal oath-breaking candidates will have a pass to run for office again, given the non-functioning in Congress. And so they're still not giving up. Doesn't matter what the liberal justices say. They think Donald Trump should be barred from the ballot. Which side is more anti-democratic now? So what if this law was passed in 1876 and aimed primarily at, you know, treating Trump like some battered Confederate general? Remember, here's the key line. Nothing in the Constitution requires that we endure such chaos. Here's a piece from Rich Lowry, frequent guest on Media Buzz, editor of National Review. And I'm going to let him have his say, and then I'm going to give a counter-argument, which I think he conspicuously leaves out. So were I talking to him today, we'd have a little back and forth. Lowry, if Trump is convicted in the case and loses the election, meaning in any of these criminal cases, his allies will have already made argument that the election was rigged. A Biden administration prosecutor rushed the case to trial on a political timetable to get the result, a felony conviction, that all the polling said would hurt Trump's prospects most. If there is no trial before the election and Trump wins, the left will have a ready-made argument that the election was illegitimate. The MAGA court did Trump's bidding by delaying the proceedings or ruling in the former president's favor on some question of law. The public was denied crucial information, etc. Jack Smith, in short, is a delegitimizing machine. His prosecution is a stick of TNT in the middle of an already fraught election. In their attacks on the Supreme Court, left-wing opinion makers have said how worried they are that if the January 6th trial doesn't take place, justice as they see it won't be done. Trump could win the election again, order an end to any prosecution. But their fear that Trump might not be hobbled by the case, as they hoped and expected, adds an extra element to the outrage. Here's Dan Pfeiffer on Substack, Pfeiffer, the former top Barack Obama White House advisor. Democrats in my text chains on social media are equal parts enraged and despondent over the news. Some worried Democrats comforted themselves by believing that Trump's chances to return to the White House would end with a conviction. No trial before the election means no conviction. So, Rich says, basically, special counsel Jack Smith's case is inherently political. One, it involves a political offense, Trump's conduct after the 2020 election. Two, it is happening in a political context, hard up against a national election, with Smith desperate to get to trial before the election and with supporters of the prosecution depending on it to produce the political outcome they desire. Bottom line, this makes the Smith prosecution a precarious, not to mention very ill-advised venture. Now, for the purposes of discussion, let's say all of Rich Lowry's points are accurate. He completely leaves out the other side, which is, if you want to accuse Jack Smith of having political motives in trying to get either the January 6th trial or maybe more likely the classified documents case decided on by a jury before the November election. What about Trump? His strategy is the opposite. Delay, file appeals, challenge. He just sent a filing, made a filing in the form I saw it was a letter to the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg. This is the Stormy Daniels case. Bragg, now the one who's scheduled to go first, actually his start date of the end of this month because it's a state case. And basically saying this is, you know, purely partisan and arguing the facts of the case, and also just saying that Bragg himself should step down and the whole case should be folded. I wouldn't hold my breath on that. But whatever it is, Trump takes every opportunity to appeal in the way that will take the longest period of time, or to file a bunch of motions, as lawyers are known to do. This is not some shocking tactic invented by the Trump attorneys, where they want discovery on certain things or you name it. And so, it's true that Jack Smith is trying to rush these cases into the courtroom. It is also true that Donald Trump is trying to slow down these cases. That's the battle here. And I think any honest accounting, maybe Rich feels like the other side's been told so much he's going to give the anti-Jack Smith side. It requires you to mention both. Eli Mistel. You often see him on MSNBC. He works for The Nation. And his reaction was this: the Supreme Court must be stopped. The court is fundamentally anti-democratic. And the only way to limit the damage it can do is to reduce its power, budget, and lack of accountability. You know, we could have all the conversations we want about, you know, should there be lifetime tenure, but, you know, that's not changing anytime soon. Also, was the Supreme Court fundamentally anti-democratic in the days of passing Roe v. Wade, in the days of upholding civil rights legislation, or is the Supreme Court only undemocratic when you don't like the outcome? Here's a headline from the AP. Supreme Court restores Trump to ballot, rejecting state attempts to hold him accountable for attack on Capitol in 2021. Oh, I don't know if that sounds a little bit tilted to you. Liberal journalist Brian Buettler. Here's the summary of events. 9-0 that the Constitution doesn't apply to Trump. 5-4 that Republican presidents can attempt all the coups they want. Oh, and what analysis of this whole situation would be complete without listening to Charles Barkley, who, you know, has now this show once a week with Gayle King, and so it's called King Charles, isn't that clever? And so during the show, Gayle played a clip, and I talked about this on Media Buzz on Sunday, of Trump boasting about black people, among whom he's gotten surprising level of support, at least according to the polls, 28% in a recent survey, you know, unheard of in the modern era for a Republican candidate. He boasted about black people wearing shirts with his mugshot on it. And Gayle said to Charles, "When you heard that, what did you think?" Barkley lets out a sigh and said, "First of all, I'm just gonna say this. If I see a black person walking around with Trump mugshot, I'm gonna punch him in the face." Gayle jumped in. Charles, you really can't say that. Because A, you don't really mean that. "Oh, I mean that sincerely," he said. "And then you'll be arrested for assault. And then what? I'm gonna bail myself out and go celebrate." So the audience laughed, and Gayle turned to the crowd and said, "Don't encourage him." I guess if you're Barkley, you can get away with it. But yeah, I don't see it happening.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
REI Co-op has everything for camping, glamping, scampering, and whatever they're doing.
Cannonball!
Relaxing, axing, waxing.
I'm sorry, what?
REI waxes your skis, man.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Okay.
Biking, hiking, and whatever outdoor thing rhymes with hiking. You get it. REI Co-op is the place for gear, clothing, classes, and advice. For the million and one ways to opt outside.
Story two. This is an interesting take in the New York Times, which is about the changing view of the Trump presidency, particularly among Republicans. "More than 3 years of distance from the daily onslaught has faded, changed, and in some cases warped Americans' memories of events that at the time felt searing. Polling suggests that voters' views on Trump's policies and his presidency have improved in the rearview mirror." That often happens with former presidents, that you remember the good things and the controversies kind of fade away. "In interviews, voters often have a hazy recall of one of the most tumultuous periods in modern politics." So, while Trump is kind of staking his campaign on nostalgia for a time that's not some distant era, not that long ago, Biden's campaign is counting on voters to refocus on Trump. In fact, there's a fundraising appeal being sent around for Joe. "Remember how you felt the day after Donald Trump was elected president? Remember walking around in disbelief and fear of what was to come?" Now,
there are over 4 million 18-year-olds who are now eligible to vote. And they were in middle school when Trump was first elected. Now, polls show that they have soured on President Biden, in part because of his support for Israel and the war in Gaza. They favor Trump, even though Trump was also a staunch ally to Israel while in office. They interview a couple of sort of persons on the street. One says, now, I don't blame Trump for COVID, but all those things, the lockdowns, those happened under Trump. Another person interviewed said that he remembers the Trump presidency as a time of chaos. He made great media. He would listen to public radio on the way home and think, okay, what has Trump done this time? That's kind of the tone of what life was like. The frenetic pace of the Trump years meant many Americans made Trump news an obsessive habit or tuned down completely the rat-a-tat volume, coinciding with the continued rise of siloed, algorithm-driven social media and shrinking attention spans. So basically the point of this piece is that all this stuff happened under Trump and people got numb about it, and some of them are too young to have any much firsthand memory of it. Here's a professor from the University of Washington saying, you know, it was a conditioned emotional response. You either felt joy and admiration or disgust and anger, but each individual act is just a drop in the ocean. And, I mean, January 6th, the classic example. So this story points to a Washington Post piece saying that Republicans, in just the 3 years since everybody watched this horrifying day at the Capitol, have become less likely to describe the rioters as violent and more likely to absolve Trump of responsibility. And you have to give Trump some credit for that because he's expressed a lot of sympathy for the rioters, even though many have, you know, received substantial jail terms, pleaded guilty. But, you know, he has a message and he sticks to that message and he repeats it. And many of his followers believe anything he says. And, you know, I guess there's some dispute about, was it something that just got out of control or was it a planned attack in which members of Congress and a certain former vice president might have been killed if things had just gone in a different direction. Okay, in other Trump news, the former chief financial officer of the Trump Organization pleaded guilty yesterday to perjury. Now, you'll probably know this name by now, Alan Weisselberg. He basically ran this company for Trump for years and years and years. And he made statements to the New York Attorney General's office, that's Letitia James, that led to, or supported, I guess you would say, James filing this civil fraud lawsuit against Trump and his business that just resulted in that absurdly punitive $355 million fine. I have to remember to separate that from the Jean Carroll case. You know, this is a lot of hard work, folks. You can go out and enjoy your day. I got to keep all the ones separately. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who can't tell Jim Comer from Jim Comey, but it's my job to know this stuff. Anyway, in this latest case, Weisselberg facing now 5 counts of perjury, a felony. And he pleaded to 2 counts of perjury. And he had also been penalized $1 million in that civil trial. So when Weisselberg pleaded guilty in 2022, an attorney said the decision was to put an end to this case and the years-long legal and personal nightmares it has caused for him. Remember, the thing he did, well, I'm certainly not defending it, was, you know, he took certain gifts from Donald Trump in the form of tuition help for his kids and a Mercedes or some luxury car, a couple other things. And that got him 3 months in prison instead of 15 years. And Trump at the time called him a fine and honorable man who's been harassed, persecuted, and threatened by law enforcement. But this was the deal he was pushed into making. Story four. It's been a gradual change that I've noticed, but Kamala Harris is getting a chance to make more news. Now, that doesn't happen, as Joe Biden knows, when you're vice president. Everything you say is supposed to be vetted by the president's office. Not that Joe Biden always followed that rule. There was that time in 2012 where he went on Meet the Press and, oh, got ahead of Obama in coming out for gay marriage. Obama was furious because it had been planned that Obama was going to do it the next week, and then it looked like he was reacting to Joe. But in any event, I think after making a very unfavorable impression on the public that Kamala Harris now is closer to seeming more natural on TV, is more outspoken. Sometimes the VP, especially on issues like abortion and IVF, can go further and say things the president can't say, particularly if that VP happens to be a woman. But she met privately with a member of Israel's war cabinet, Benny Gantz, at the White House. And she emphasized the urgency of securing a hostage deal, reducing the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. She praised Israel's constructive approach to seeking a six-week ceasefire, which meanwhile is nowhere near happening. Urged the government to do more to allow desperately needed aid to reach those in need in Gaza. And the fact that she used stronger language, for example, she demanded an immediate ceasefire. And that, you know, you get into the linguistic weeds here. Immediate ceasefire of the six-week variety. Get the hostages out, as opposed to immediate permanent ceasefire where the war is just magically declared over, which is everybody knows is not going to happen. But she also directed remarks at Hamas and said, you know, we stand in support of Israel. But it's totally clear that Biden has utterly lost confidence in Bibi Netanyahu, who is basically ignoring him, especially with the attacks on Rafah, that incredibly crowded refugee area, where, of course, there have been civilian casualties. Now, this piece in the Times, New York Times, saying that in meetings at the White House, she's been forceful in urging the administration not to dismiss the anger from Palestinian Americans and others in the U.S. who contend Biden hasn't done enough to prevent the deaths of tens of thousands of civilians in Gaza, according to four sources. And again, I don't think she's going rogue here. I think she's being given more room to be more visible. And look, for all the people who say that if Joe Biden is reelected, you know, well before he turns 86, Kamala Harris might be the next president, they might be right. So obviously there's a lot of interest in what she does. Oh, here's how they put it. Harris's focus on Israel could also help promote her foreign policy credentials at a time when many in her party have questioned whether she's ready to take over for Biden if something were to happen to him. Oh, so there might be a little bit of politics involved. Well, it is an election year, folks.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Okay, story number five. This has kind of blown me away on about three, four, or five different levels. It's about Monica Lewinsky. And let me just skip to the point where I would say that many younger people today have no idea who Monica Lewinsky is. That she was the White House intern who infamously had sex with Bill Clinton in a small room off the Oval Office, leading to the business about the infamous blue dress. And I would just think, especially since she hasn't exactly dropped off the radar, she's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair, for example, and has helped to lead an anti-bullying campaign. It's not like she just went back to LA and we never heard from her again. And I would just think, as a matter of pop culture, that everybody would have heard of Monica Lewinsky, no matter how old you are. But this Times piece says, the next act in her career, modeling. Lewinsky is the star of a new campaign introduced this week by Reformation, a fashion brand. I'm not familiar with, but maybe many younger people are. The campaign is called You've Got the Power. And it's meant to promote not only the brand, but also voter registration ahead of the election. Monica Lewinsky is now 50 years old. And she told the Times that she was flattered and a bit stunned to be tapped for the project. Her latest marker on the path toward self-acceptance. Growing up in Los Angeles, a city where she said beauty was achieved with smoke and mirrors, she didn't fit the mold. She was, as are her words, a chubby brunette who, she said jokingly, had real boobs. Although she said she relished the opportunity to issue a gentle reminder to women to make sure that they registered to vote, she was quick to acknowledge that, you know, this also appealed to her vanity. She saw it as a way to earn street cred with a new generation, and she hoped that Reformation's perceived cool factor would somehow rub off on her. I mean, this is a pretty interesting interview, don't you think? I'll take any opportunity for people to think I'm cool, she said, laughing. Some on social media have called her an icon. Others said they never heard of her. So in these photographs, how they describe here, she projects self-assurance and a subtle sensuality. Some images show her playing boss, her hair backswept, wearing items including a black leather trench coat and a scoop neck midi dress. In another, she exudes glamour in a close-fitting red top and matching flared skirt. In case you were wondering, these garments are priced from $78 to $798 for the leather trench coat. She's never been photographed for a fashion campaign, and she says, I'm not comfortable in front of a camera. I find it stressful even to choose what you're supposed to wear. To help her pose confidently, oh, this is just a publicist's dream, come on. To help her pose confidently, the Reformation marketing team provided her with a coach. That made all the difference. But the prospect of vamping for a photo shoot resurfaced many of the insecurities that plagued her as a girl and a young woman who endured relentless scrutiny in the 90s. People weren't very kind, she said, and they weren't very kind about the way I looked. Those experiences still impact me today. I remember the New York Post just did this like day after day, calling her the portly pepper pot. Okay, she was a little overweight. So are zillions of people. But zillions of people didn't have an affair with the President of the United States. Experience has taught her, I'm learning to weather the storm. I found that resilience is a muscle you build. So those of you who are interested, you can go Google this and see the layout, the photo shoot. At least some of the pictures are online. And it's all very tasteful. Sometimes she looks like a boss. Sometimes she looks like a woman you might be interested in picking up at a bar. And, you know, one thing Monica Lewinsky has learned is how to get publicity. But here she is certainly is being aided and abetted by the press. And now the people who didn't know who she was will know who she was and will rush out, I suppose, to get these designer items. Just spell the name right. Reformation. Well, I just can't believe I'm still talking about Monica Lewinsky decades later. When Monica Lewinsky was the biggest get in television, she had been interviewed by Ken Starr and been sucked into what became the Clinton impeachment probe. And Barbara Walters got the first interview with her, but it wasn't going to air for several days. And Barbara Walters was a friend of mine, but I got from sources other than Barbara Walters an almost line-by-line recitation of all the newsworthy bits in the interview. I mean, looking back, it's amazing because ABC obviously wanted to break all this on the air. And I was able to write a story that had, you know, didn't have the power of watching her say these things with the world-famous superstar interviewer. But it was a pretty good day's work. And here she is, back in the news again. Well, thank you for your time. I always enjoy these sessions. And the numbers that we get suggest that many of you do as well. Back here tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.